We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bojovic. Joining me today is Gareth Soloway, President and CFO and Chief Market Strategist of InTheMoneyStocks.com. Thanks for joining me today, Gareth.
Hey, Tom. Always a pleasure to be back on with you and discuss the markets.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's definitely no shortage of things to talk about today. Why don't we start by, you know, chatting about something that we've spoken about before on the program, and that's about Bitcoin. You know, you made a pretty big call last time, called for a bottom down to about 20,000. So, you know, kind of walk us through your thinking and maybe the progression on your thinking on that chart.
Yeah, it's a great one. And before I show my chart, the concept behind further downside is not only just pure technical, which we do have, but it's also noticing the similarities between past historic periods. So if you look at, for instance, at the dot-com bubble, where the idea was that the internet was a brand new technology, it was going to change the world, and you had these crazy kind of, you know, dot-com companies that barely made any revenue, run out of their parents' basement almost, going to multi 10, 20, 100, $150 million valuations. It's very similar to what we saw over the last 12 to 18 months in the cryptocurrency industry, with meme coins that were made as jokes getting $60 billion valuations. And what we saw in the dot-coms is a flush out that basically wiped out a lot of the crap. And then the quality survived, the Amazons, the Googles, they flourished because people were right. It was a technology that had staying power. So then you look at the crypto market and you see something like Amazon, the equivalent maybe being Bitcoin. So yes, it might have to get a flush to wipe out all the other junk out there, but ultimately I do think it survives and thrives. Now, one of the interesting things I've talked about before is how if you look at the 2000 chart, the year 2000 chart of Amazon, when it was topping, you see the exact same pattern as what Bitcoin has formed since April's high, November's high of 2021, that big M top. So little things like that are very similar. Another similarity that's kind of intriguing is that at the height of the dot-com era, it was about $2.9 trillion in dot-com market cap. The crypto market, I believe, in November hit 3.1. So just around the same level. So those type of things get my attention. And also, you know, you see, we didn't really have social media back in 2000, but you see this kind of over-exuberance, there's irrational exuberance, to use a Greenspan quote, in the crypto market, where people just got so hyped up and are still so hyped up that almost never lasts. You need some sort of flush out. So if we go to the chart now, let's take a look at the Bitcoin chart. I'll show you on the technical basis what we have. So Bitcoin has this beautiful M top, which again looks identical to what we saw in Amazon in the 2000 era. And then you could see here is that this is staying within this channel. So you connect this low to this low, and the parallel line connects perfectly through these highs. And we just hit it right here, the high end of that area. So as long as this pattern continues and you stay inside of this channel, this is actually a bear flag formation. So if you look at the big move down right here, this is all inside bar technical price action inside of this bigger move, staying below the 200 moving average. If you looked at 1,000 of these charts that have this same formation or had this same formation, I would say probably 70 to 80% of them ultimately break to the downside. So it again leads you to believe that even though you're seeing a lot of hype in the crypto market again with this little move up in Bitcoin, it likely is not the end of the downside. The one thing that would change my mind if we started to establish ourselves above this area. All right, so this pattern, if this holds, it's bearish. If you start trading above it, then that could change. The pattern is then weakened, potentially voided, and then maybe you start trading back to the upside. Not to really,
breaking that 200-day moving average, and we would need maybe a weekly close or something above that trend line to be able to kind of confirm that move, right?
Yeah. That's exactly what I would want to see. I want to see. So a lot of average investors get fooled by like one close above and they jump on the bandwagon because they're so pumped up. That oftentimes can be a fake out. It can be done by institutions to try to stop out shorts and get longs on the table before they run it the other way. So you really want to see a kind of at least a multi-day close above it, or a weekly close would be very, very powerful. A couple of the other cool things with this chart, I just want to show you guys this, is that if you look at this past move, right? So this is the most similar period to this over here. It's very, very similar. One of the cool things to see is that if you took the low here, this was on May 19th, 2021, the bottom right here was the 20th of July, right? So basically 2 months and one day, and then you began this move up. If you take this low was January 24th. Well, guess what? The beginning of this move was virtually the same 2 month span, and you've gone up here. Now, a lot of people would say, well, why this one broke sharply to the upside? So why won't this one? And there is a distinct difference here. This is a downsloping channel, right? So let me draw that a little bit more clearly so you guys can see it. So if you look at this, price was going up and down inside of this pattern here, okay? And then you broke out. If you look at this, the difference is that this one's an upsloping channel, right? So this one, again, knowing how charts work, this is bullish, it usually breaks up. This is bearish, it usually breaks down. So again, just important for everyone watching, this is all based on probabilities. Probabilities don't guarantee any move. So it's just giving us the likely scenario, maybe 70, 80% likelihood. Still leaves the chance that, you know, like I said, this pattern could fail 20, 30% of the time.
Mm-hmm. And before we leave that chart, Gareth, you know, talk a little bit about buying into a resistance level there. You know, you said that there are investors that are very likely getting, you know, a little bit over exuberant coming into a momentum move like that. So, you know, again, talk to us a little bit about how we should analyze wanting to buy into a resistance level like that. Not only the channel, but the 200 as well.
Yeah, so I think that's the best thing is to understand that you are buying into resistance. So imagine standing in front of a brick wall 1 inch away and trying to run through it, right? You're not getting through it. You don't have the momentum to go through it. So
unless you know Kung Fu, right?
Right, exactly. You might have the whole world on Twitter or on social media cheering you on and saying, hey, you know, this looks amazing, but you have to look at the facts, and the charts really show us the facts. Now, at some point, if you were to get a consolidation pattern where it got some momentum, then maybe it could break through. But the odds, again, of this breaking through right here are very low. Now, again, you could see it's all of a sudden stopped right there. It's kind of pausing. Pausing's okay. It kind of could be gathering itself at that point. I'd like to see a little bit more of a pullback before it makes an attempt. But right now, you know, buying into resistance is never something you want to do. And what you'll find is usually the hype is greatest buying into resistance, which is just kind of the weird nature of how human psychology works versus how reality is when it comes to the charts. Mm-hmm.
So Gareth, you know, when we think about not only the technical patterns here, how does that also line up with, let's say, the NASDAQ and the kind of relationship of the economic environment that we're facing here, considering the Fed situation and, you know, taking a bit more of the, not necessarily just the technical factors, but more of the fundamental backdrop of the environment here?
Yeah. And I would say that's what I'm most concerned about. We've seen such an amazing rally in the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ 100, I think, is in the last 2+ weeks from this low is up about 15% from low to high. Now, we're having a little bit of a pullback today, but for the most part, you have to be very skeptical. Number one, we also just went right into the 200. Now, by the way, look over here how they closed us above the 200 one time, and over here, same thing, right? And then look at what the market did. Now, it's not guaranteeing that's what the market's going to do here, but just like you were saying before, and I was saying, is that don't trust just one close above. It could be a fake out, and I would guarantee some people got faked out and went long right here before they got flushed out on the way down. But having said that, people need to remember that the Fed is basically giving you their playbook. They're saying that, listen, right now, inflation is our worst enemy. We are going to raise. They're even talking about 50 basis point raises multiple times this year. And if lowering interest rates and printing money caused us to rally so hugely during kind of the COVID period, which we had an amazing rally during, then it only makes sense that the opposite would happen if they're tightening. So yes, it's a great rally here. But again, I'd be very, very cautious. I mean, the Fed is basically giving you their playbook. Everyone used to say, don't fight the Fed. Now no one's saying it, right? Because it's the opposite. And I always find that fascinating how really, if you don't fight the Fed that way, well, you shouldn't be fighting the Fed the other way too on the downside. But now no one wants to say that. And I think it's something that investors need to hear because it makes sense. They're sucking out liquidity from the market. Arguably, the crypto bubble, which I call it a bubble back in 2021, was partially caused by that, by excess money in the system. Same thing with stocks. If they're pulling it back, you likely will see more downside, especially in stocks here. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not taking only Bitcoin or the NASDAQ into account here, how does the Fed raising rates affect some of the, let's say, the meme stock names and some of these broader indexes?
Yeah, so I think it again, it affects them by the idea that you now have a relation, and you've already always had this relationship where as interest rates go up, there's always a certain amount of money that's in the market that will rethink being in the market versus being in the bond market. So, you know, if I were to say to you, well, right now you can get 2% in bonds or 1% in bonds, or you could be in the stock market and maybe make 15% for the year, but you're taking some risk, obviously being in the stock market, stocks can crash, they can have bad earnings. You know, at those interest rates, you probably would say, well, I'll give it a shot in the stock market. But as interest rates go up, what if all of a sudden we had 20% interest rates? Now, I'm using a hypothetical that won't happen. But the idea is at a certain point, there's always investors that say, you know what, risk-free 5%, I don't trust the stock market. I don't trust that we're going to stay out of recession. I'm going to move my money to the safe haven of the bond market and get that return and take away that risk. And when you see that money coming out of the market, that's what then creates the downward pressure. So by the Fed raising rates, that's exactly what they're trying to trigger. They're trying to trigger a sucking up of liquidity that takes it out of the stock market, that takes it out of the consumer pocket and puts it into kind of a holding zone where people won't touch it.
Mm-hmm. So as we talk about the Fed really hiking rates here and being aggressive against inflation, how many rate hikes do you actually think we're going to see this year?
So, you know, if we include the 50 basis points as what a one rate hike, then I would say likely just 2 to 3 more. All right. I don't think they're going to do 7 or 8 like now they're talking about. And the main reason I don't think it is because you are already seeing the economy starting to stutter a little bit. And again, people aren't really talking about this, but the housing market is already slowing down. We've seen new home sales start to crater because, you know, not only are home sales at all-time highs, or I should say home prices at all-time highs, but now with the 10-year yield where it is and the 30-year, paying interest on a mortgage is becoming very, very expensive. So it's really increasing the amount of money to buy a house that it takes. And that's putting it out of reach for a lot of people. Then you add in inflation and what it's doing. When you have to fill up your gas tank and it costs you $100, $120, $140, that's hurts people. You know, there's no doubt about it. So you're going to see that the Fed rate hikes slow the economy. Historically, that's been proven that it does that. And then you add in inflation, which is another tax on consumers. And now you're slowing it even more. So my guess is they'll get a few rate hikes in before they have to stop, but you will at some point see a recession or at least close to a recession by late 2022, and then probably a recession in 2023.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as part of that recession signaling, Gareth, when we look at the Treasury yields getting close to inverting, is that another sign that's kind of pointing towards that?
Yeah, I mean, historically, when the 2 and 10 inverts, it does signal a recession. And again, in history, at least in recent history, when that's happened, the Fed has been able to come out with bazookas blazing with the money printing, right? They've been able to just fire away that money into the system. Unfortunately, you don't have that ability anymore with 10% inflation. And I think that's going to be a realization that investors are going to come to eventually, probably in the second half of 2022, that the Fed cannot bail us out again. And start watching the economic data, because with inflation and with oil prices spiking so much recently, it's going to add to inflation even more so. So inflation is not coming down in the next year or two, in my opinion. It's going to stay at 8 to 10% probably. Maybe after that, the supply side starts to kind of come down as things get relaxed there. But the Fed is not going to be able to print us out as easily from the next recession. And that's really the big issue here is we haven't had a long-term recession in a long, long time, minimum 2008, 2009. And they got us out of that one by printing money, let's not forget, and bailing out lots of banks and just kind of throwing, you know, I remember Ben Bernanke was called Helicopter Ben, right? Because he just airdropped so much money in the system. But how do they do that with 10% inflation? I don't think they can. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the oil price. Could we look at the oil chart and kind of get your thoughts on that as well?
Yeah. So I've been a bear on oil. I'm a big believer that we're at a point where you've actually seen a short-term, maybe longer-term top in oil. I want to show you guys why. So I love my parallel channels. I've shown them to you guys already in this video or in this recording here. And I want you guys to take a look at this. If you take the high from 2008, which was the last epic run in oil, and then you look at the high here, if you take a trend line down, look at how it literally dissects this line here, right here, and right here. And again, these lines, these parallel channels have so much power in the market. It must have something to do with psychology since charts are based off of that. But again, my guess is this is a longer term high on oil, just like it was over here. And my guess is you're going to head down pretty sharply over the next couple of years on oil, and you could be back at $20 a barrel. And again, that's multiple years out, so don't get mad at me if it doesn't happen in 6 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you have to think that there's demand destruction. I think Russia will be very, they'll rue the day they invaded Ukraine and caused these issues, because it's going to push alternate energy much faster than it would have been otherwise, right? So now all of a sudden you have this scenario where countries are like, okay, we cannot rely on a different country for our energy because it's a national security issue, right? And so, and you're seeing it play out in Europe, how they were boxed in and they're like, holy crap, we're relying on Russia. And so you're going to see a push towards more alternate energy. Nuclear power is probably going to come back with a vengeance, and more countries and Europe itself will start to look for a way to be energy independent. And that's going to hurt Russia, since Russia is a main player in the world in terms of oil and natural gas.
So as we've seen, you know, this real volatility in the oil market, I think, you know, an interesting parallel maybe is the volatility that we've seen in the gold market. So can you kind of walk us through, you know, hitting that just above $2,000 and then going back below $1,900? Give us some of your thinking around what's going on there.
Yeah. So what you're seeing in the gold market is classic breakout mentality. And I want people to understand that is that, you know, a lot of people look at that big move up on gold and then the retrace here and they're like, oh, you know, that's not good for gold. That's actually very, very normal. And what I mean by that is if you look at the breakout that we saw on gold, which was right here, and I think we even talked about it in the last interview of it, that I expected this breakout, you then rallied sharply. But where did you go? You went right to this double top, right? So you basically retested the 2020 high, which is resistance. And when you hit resistance, like if you run into a wall, you're probably going to bounce off of it. So you've seen a pullback here. I actually expect gold to come back to about this level right here, about 1850, give or take. So I still think there's some more downside on gold, but that is very normal. It's a retrace to the scene of the crime, which was the breakout trend line. And then my guess is from that point on, you're going to go up and actually break above this high and you should be off to the races. So very, very bullish on gold. Just understanding that no chart goes straight up forever. You have to have these healthy checkbacks. It's actually a healthy thing for a chart to do. And I still think gold has broken out. It hasn't negated the breakout yet with this pullback. And you will start to see a big move up following a retrace here. Mm-hmm.
Does the chart of gold here look very similar if we include kind of inflation numbers to the 1970s here, Gareth?
Oh, unbelievably similar. So let me just show you guys this. And this is always a fun thing for me to show is, and I always try to tell people to remember this, but basically from 2018 to 2020, we went up, right? So it was a pretty unbelievable rally, $1,100 to about 2000 and change. And then you had 2 years of consolidations from 2020 into the current year of 2022, right? So remember, 2 years up, 2 years consolidation, and then a breakout. Now, what we're going to do here is we're going to flip back to the 1970s. I'll go to the weekly chart so we can get there a little quicker. Let's go all the way back. Here we are. And now look at this, right? Let's zoom it out even more. So take a look at this. From 73 to 75 here was your up move. So 2 years up, 2 years of consolidation, okay, from 75 to basically 77 or so, and then look at what's happening here. So again, if you map it out, and I love looking at history for these types of things, gold is repeating its structure, its playbook directly from the 70s, which was the last time we had this type of inflation in the market at a sustainable level. So again, notice that move. We are probably, if you want to just play of where we are in the breakout, we're probably like, I mean, let's look at the double top, in fact. All right. So you could arguably say we're right here in the gold chart. We're just pulling back like this after breaking out. I think, you know what? Let me check that back here. I would dare say that, yeah, maybe somewhere right around here. We touched double top, we pulled back. You're going to look for a breakout above that 2000 and change level. And I'm speaking about the current gold chart. Again, you'll see a revisit and then off to the races. So in the scheme of this move on gold, you're probably just right here, which is remarkable to think about, you know, where gold could go. I mean, gold Absolutely. Was $200 an ounce there. It went up to about $900 an ounce.
So does that you know, that move in the 70s and into the 80s there, does that kind of inform to you a target that you see on gold, or do you try to even set one of those at that point?
Yeah, for me, it's so tough to know, right? I mean, I think the key is you can look at a few things. You know, I don't think I have the guts to say, you know, gold's going to go from 200 to 900, the equivalent of that, which would be like a 400% gain. I think it's a potential move that you could factor in. But again, you know, calling for that type of move seems very unrealistic, even though maybe it does happen. I also think that Bitcoin being in existence at some point takes a little bit of money away from gold as a safety hedge eventually. Maybe not this year, because I still think there's more downside. But at some point, Bitcoin gets low enough and inflation remains high, where I do think it becomes kind of a digital gold type asset, and it does coax some money away from gold. But I think it's very realistic to think in a couple of years you could be at $5,000 an ounce. I mean, that's only, you know, a little over 100% move, 150% move from here. And I think gold has been lagging. It's an underinvested asset for a lot of fund managers because it hasn't performed. But you will see at some point a big rotation into the metal if it starts to perform, and everyone will chase it. Just like you saw Bitcoin getting chased back in 2021, everyone else will chase gold at some point too. Mm-hmm.
So what about silver, Gareth? Are there any particular spots you're looking to add positions on silver right now?
Yeah, there are, absolutely. So let me show the chart here on silver. So silver actually broke out. Now, I'm a little bit more conservative on silver just because we're in a position where the economy, right? It's an industrial metal as well as a store of safety. So it kind of makes sense, right? So if you were to map this chart of silver out with gold, silver should really be up here at 30 right now, right? Because gold hit its high from 2020. So why wouldn't silver be there? And the answer is probably likewise, like I just mentioned, the industrial side people are a little nervous about, because if the economy does go into recession, maybe there's a little less demand in silver. Having said that, you still broke out. You can see this trend line from this high to here, and here, you still broke out. You've done a good chunk of your retrace. So, you know, yes, it hasn't broken the highs of 30 yet, but I still think as an investor, you buy it down here as long as a breakout holds. And this is where you get into kind of don't get emotional, just go with the facts, just the facts. Well, if broke out, as long as it doesn't get back below this line, that's your buy level. And you got to go with what the chart is telling you. So again, I think gold, silver will still trade up to a 30. It'll probably have some resistance there, but even from 24 to 30 is a great technical percentage move on silver.
Absolutely. So, you know, as we think about, again, this volatile environment that we're in, and some of these metals that are going to be very essential for our future, obviously a lot of our listeners will know about the crazy situation that happened in nickel and the kind of short squeeze that happened there. So how do you see an opportunity like that? And what would you like to have done about it? Or is there anything that you're able to learn from that situation?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely remarkable. And this kind of got the black swan event of you know, with the invasion and then fear that nickel supply was going to be majorly disrupted. You know, you then had this pop, and I think a lot of the contracts were halted, I believe. It was just kind of a crazy scenario. My guess, when you see this type of crazy move where a metal like this goes from, you know, 2000 an ounce in a couple of days all the way up to 5,000, you know, 500 or so, chances are that what's causing that isn't real demand. it's probably short squeezing, right? So you probably had some hedge funds, and we may find out about them in the coming weeks or months, that were short nickel. And when it popped to a certain amount, they basically blew up. The funds blew up, and they were forced to cover all of their nickel shorts at once. And when a hedge fund gets put in that position, they can't say, "Oh, well, I think it'll come down." It's like when your debt gets called, you pay it regardless, right? So that's probably what happened there. You know, these type of crazy moves, very hard for me as a technician to trade, because you don't really have a lot of firm technical, you know, probability stuff. Mm-hmm. So for me, I kind of look and just stay on the sidelines. I watch it in amazement. The only thing you could do here, and if you look at just before the move, it was kind of trading right here at 2000. That was the one opportunity you had. I did not take this trade, but you see how it basically retraced the entire move. And you also had this even number of 2000. I'm a big fan of even numbers playing a role in psychological levels. So when you came back to 2000, buyers were like, okay, it's negated the move. It's gone back to this even number. I'll give it a shot here. And you have seen a little bit of a bounce off of that, but that was just a wild scenario.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we're looking at crazy charts like this, can we move to maybe a fertilizer chart? Mm-hmm. I know you and I talked about that a little bit before we hit record here. And if there's any kind of plays around it that you like as well.
Yeah. So fertilizer just had, I mean, this is a chart of Mosaic, which is a fertilizer supplier here in the US. And this one, I mean, you're right. It went gangbusters from basically $45 topping out at around $71, $72 in a matter of weeks here. In terms of buying, I would never be someone who chases here. You know, again, I always remember, and people should always remember, like, don't chase the hype, right? When you hear everyone else screaming about something, it's usually the time to stay out, wait for it to pull back. I've almost never seen a chart that went parabolic and didn't pull back. And that's inclusive of GameStop and AMC, which have come way off and actually had a recent run back up a little bit. But for me, I just go to the technical charts, right? So what I would do is, you can see very clearly that here's a beautiful trend line. You take this hop to this top, which actually coincides perfectly right there. And so now if price comes back to that level, that would be a major support, where at that point you can say, okay, we know that there's still, let's say there's still issues with supply of wheat and grains from you know, Ukraine and Russia. That would be a level where I would say, okay, the risk reward makes sense. It's pulled back from 72 to $50 here. You also have the even number of 50 right in the mix, right in between there. And you have this longer term trend line. So for me, it's kind of like this is my level that I will play, or I will be disciplined enough to do something stupid, and I can just stay on the sidelines and not play it. And in investing, doing something not stupid is just as important as making a good trade, right? Because when you lose a chunk of money, you have to work doubly as hard to get it back, just to get back into the green from where you were prior. Mm-hmm.
So Gareth, you know, when we think about basically the underlying asset that all of these markets are priced in, let's have a look at the US dollar, if you wouldn't mind, and kind of give us your thinking about that and how that affects all of these other markets.
Yeah. So, I mean, generally the dollar going up is negative for gold. I think the dollar is short-term overbought. It makes sense that it's short-term overbought, considering that it's still the reserve currency of the world. It's still known around the world as being the place to go for safety. So it makes sense that it's had such an amazing run here from, you know, just going back to May of last year, you're all the way up, you know, basically you tapped on 100, just shy of 100, and now you're pulling back. So, you know, again, in general, a stronger dollar should be deflationary generally. I don't see that happening. We don't see that happening. I think that's also another risk that the market is facing, because if the dollar does start to come down, well, then, you know, buying goods from other countries become more expensive for us. So, I mean, that's been the one positive here, is that with a strong dollar, you could buy something from China that's actually on a little bit on the cheaper side technically, versus what it would be if you had a weak dollar versus the yuan or the Japanese yen or anything like that. But the bottom line is, you're seeing buyers in the dollar, and you're seeing the dollar having gone up because of the global geopolitical risk. Once that subsides, you have to think the dollar is going to come down. I do believe that when we start seeing a recession and the chance of the Federal Reserve trying to figure out a way to print money, maybe lower interest rates again, the dollar will go even lower. And I think you have to pay attention to stories that have come out about Saudi Arabia potentially allowing China to buy their oil in digital yuan. Any shift away from the dollar as being the reserve currency that all transactions are done in will spread, I do fear, and eventually it will displace the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And then the dollar's in a lot of trouble when countries don't have to hold, you know, billions, if not trillions of dollars in reserve currencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And kind of conversely, on the other side of that, Gareth, you know, as we've seen this conflict play out, we saw Russian stocks like Gazprom go down by like 87%, something like that. Are there or were there any opportunities that you saw as part of that you wanted to maybe kind of get into? Or, you know, talk to us about some of the risks that you foresaw as well about trying to get into some of those maybe Russian equities like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's such a tricky one. Now, you know, full and fair disclosure, I actually have some RSX. This is the Gazprom chart, but I did when it was getting crushed, I'm a trader, right? So I'm looking at something like the Russian stock market and it just getting crushed. And so I did pick up a small amount, obviously, in my portfolio, very small relative, because you have to understand the risks involved. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to me, it was, you know, just thinking on a logical basis that at some point things get worked out. The only negative is that probably sanctions aren't lifted until Vladimir Putin's not in office anymore, which could be, I mean, for all we know, it could be years, if not decades. So that's your negative, is that if the sanctions continue. So a lot of things like RSX got halted. It's been halted now for about a month, but you can see, I mean, look at the dive this thing had. It went from 25 in a straight line down to $5.65. Now, my hope is that, and I, again, I'm in the position halted, so there's nothing I can do about it right now. But mm-hmm. my hope is that whenever it reopens, the only time it's going to reopen is if things are in a much better place. And if that happens, then it may gap up to $15 to $20 again. If the war is over, if maybe Vladimir Putin's not in power anymore, then you have this major potential upside to it. So there is a silver lining. But again, you know, there's always the other side where maybe it never reopens and I have to take that loss. So in regards to Gazprom, yes, they're so cheap. That company, you know, oil companies and so forth with oil prices here, if you can get in them and you're okay with the risk, then there's a lot of potential upside. But just really understand the risk involved of being in anything like that, that could be halted, maybe not allowed to trade on US indexes or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's interesting. Interesting to point out there, Gareth. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to cover before we wrap up here?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, super interesting to watch Bitcoin currently at this major 200 moving average in this upper trend line, because I mean, we should know in the next couple of days to week whether or not it's going to try to break above that area and try to do something bullish, or is it stuck in this bearish chart pattern, which I think it is, and potentially falling down. And I think in regards to the market, don't be surprised if the markets start heading down very, very sharply. For some reason, it seems like investors have forgot about all the rate hikes coming down from the Federal Reserve over the next 6 or 12 months. They've forgotten about how crazy inflation is. And I think that the market will have another reckoning day where we'll probably take out the lows from the last couple months over the next couple months in the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Of course, Gareth, you're available at inthemoneystocks.com, at ITMS on Twitter, and at Gareth Soloway as well on Twitter. Gareth, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime, Tom. Thanks for having me.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.